We talk to Brady Tkachuk about the Four Nations face-off and the Ottawa Senators. We break down the blockbuster trade from Friday night and what's going on with the Vancouver Canucks. We'll break that down as well. All coming up and more on this episode of the NHL at the Rink podcast.
NHL at the Rink is presented by Skip, the official food delivery app of the NHL.
Welcome into another episode of the NHL at the Rink podcast. It's brought to you by Skip. Skip to the good part and get groceries, meals, and essentials delivered right to your door on Skip. Sean, we have a lot to discuss. There's a lot going on in the National Hockey League. But did you see Connor Bedard's goal? Did you see that goal Tuesday night, the shot that he made? That's insane. We're not going to take a lot of time on it, but I had to bring it up.
It's a great goal. He wasn't very happy about it, though.
Why?
He wasn't very happy about it. Oh. I was happy about it. I thought it was awesome.
It's an incredible shot. Like, Johansson gives him a window of a 2x2 window to make that shot, and he makes it from like the bottom of the circle. I just had to bring it up because it's one of those plays you see in a season where the Chicago Blackhawks, and we're going to touch on the Blackhawks and their role in the trade and the blockbuster trade that happened Friday, but it's a bad season for the Blackhawks, but Connor Bedard makes some great plays, man.
He's unbelievable. When you look at his numbers, like, they're elite rookie level numbers, and it gets lost because they're not a very good team. And they don't get good results on a regular basis, but his numbers are comparable to almost any elite rookie you want to talk about that's come into this league in the last 20 years.
Oh, by the way, before we go any further, Brady Tkachuk, we're going to have Brady Tkachuk on here shortly. We talked to the Ottawa Senators captain all about the Four Nations face-off. So you got to stay tuned. Brady Tkachuk is must listen to podcast material more than you and I, but so you got to stay tuned to listen to Brady Tkachuk. But yeah, I mean, he's not even 20 years old yet. He's a terrific player. He's going to be a big ticket there for Chicago. I do think Chicago's going to do some things this offseason that's going to improve the team in a massive way. They've got a lot of prospects there that are not there yet. Kyle Davidson and the Blackhawks' role in this blockbuster trade, obviously, is being scrutinized because all they do is they trade Taylor Hall. They get half of Mikko Rantanen's salary, and the only thing they get back is their own third-round pick. But their role is, to me, third in this blockbuster trade, Sean, that we got Friday night that really just rocked the National Hockey League, and I think continues to. I think it's still, the fallout of it is still being felt. The shockwaves are still being felt, especially in Colorado. And now what they're seeing in Carolina, the way that Rantanen and Hall played in a 4-0 win against the New York Rangers at Madison Square Garden on Tuesday. This is stuff we just don't see. We just don't see it in the middle of a season in the NHL between two teams that realistically could meet in the Stanley Cup final. It's just amazing.
It is amazing. And it's amazing that Taylor Hall has been involved in two of the biggest trades ever in the history of hockey in this quarter century.
Yeah. Well, you're right. You're right. But this one, I mean, the Avalanche are still shocked. I think they're still shocked that Mikko Rantanen's not there anymore. They're going to have to get over that because they got a pretty good player in Marty Natchez, right? I mean, this is a really good player. And what I saw on Sunday from the Colorado Avalanche with MacKinnon and Marty Natchez, that's some lights out speed right there. He's not Mikko Rantanen, completely different player. But Marty Natchez is going to be unleashed in Colorado. And you get to ride shotgun with Nathan MacKinnon. I mean, that's a pretty good place to be.
Is he going to be unleashed? My concern with that deal is, and you saw it early, and maybe it changes, he's very deferential to Nathan.
Well, you know what? I think that's probably human nature when you go there, you know, to fit in. You want to fit in, right? Like, I think at some point here's what I've heard from Marty Natchez about Marty Natchez in Carolina. I was talking to a few people from the Hurricanes who are around, the broadcasters around that team, and they were telling me, like, the thing with Marty Natchez is he had an air of, like, he's always had an air of like, I want to be the man. Like, I'm the man, right? Like, that's who I want to be. When you go to Colorado, he was the best player. Like, he was the best player on Carolina. The most talented, I think. Aho is probably the best, but most skilled, I would say, Natchez. You go to Colorado, well, you can't have that air about you. So it's going to take some time to getting used to, I think, for Natchez to be in the role that he's in now, where McKinnon's the guy, McCarr's the guy. But they don't want you to defer to them. That's the thing. Like, deferring, Rantanen never deferred to McKinnon. Made him a 100-point player. Made him a top 5 player, top 10 player in the National Hockey League because he didn't defer to McKinnon. Because he was the shooter. He was the moose on that line, right? Natchez has to get used to it and then has to be a guy that says, no, no, no. McKinnon's going to set me up. I'm going to take mine, right? I'm going to get it, and I'm going to go for it instead of being deferential to him. But I think it's human nature that you become deferential to a player like McKinnon or Cale Makar when you arrive on a new team and you're replacing the guy that they loved. Remember that too.
Well, I'm not forgetting that, but how's he going to be the man when he's never been the man? Like, not to sound like Ric Flair. If you want to be the man, you got to beat the man. Woo! But he's had all kinds of opportunities to be the man. He hasn't done it.
Well, listen, I also think that's partly the way the Hurricanes are built and the way they play and the way it goes for them. Rod Brind'Amour as a coach, he rolls his lines. He doesn't overplays the wrong word. He doesn't rely so heavily on top six over bottom six. You know, one of his most important lines is his third line all the time because it's Jordan Staal's line. I mean, right now, their third line is Jordan Staal, Seth Jarvis, and Jordan Martinook. And Staal's always been a top checking center, right? Martinook's just a gritty player, and Jarvis could be a top six guy. He could be a first line guy, easy, but they roll it. They rely on depth. In Colorado, it's always been a little bit different. Jared Bednar relies heavily on that top six. He rolls it out there a lot. I mean, Natchez's minutes already are way up from what they were in Carolina. So I think it's just going to be different for him, that's where he's going to be unleashed, I think. And then it's getting to the point where he's not deferential anymore, and he's saying, I'm a big part of this, and they put me out here for a reason. Let me do what I do.
Yeah, and I hope that comes. I haven't seen it in the first couple of games, and I understand it's the first couple of games. He's played 3 games with the Avalanche. He has 7 shots.
He was really good against I saw him against the Rangers. He was really, really good in that game. McKinnon was praising him and noticing the speed and that ability that he has, and McKinnon's speed we all know about, but the two of them, it's a one-off game. I get it. It's the second game of a back-to-back, and they're on the road and all that. They've played 3 and 4, but that game, my goodness, you saw everything that, you know, you want to see if you're an Avalanche fan or, you know, part of that organization of why you made the trade. But Sean, do you agree with the trade? Do you think Colorado did the right thing by trading Rantanen when they did?
Yes, 100%.
I do too. I wasn't on board at first, but I am now.
They're hard, hard business decisions. And we've seen teams that have been too married to what they have and what they won with. Think about the LA Kings, right, when they were at their prime, and the Chicago Blackhawks at their prime, right, and their GMs hung on to those players who made them successful, and it ruined their salary cap, and it ruined their opportunities for years to come. Like, with a hard cap, every dollar matters. And I know Mikko's come out and said, hey, I would have taken a hometown discount, but I don't even know if that would have mattered.
Yeah.
Like, that's such a heavy top-end team money-wise that you need some sort of flexibility and you need something else. And as high as I've been on the Colorado Avalanche and Mikko Rantanen, they haven't done anything since they won.
Well, yeah, and you look at their bottom six depth. It's not that strong before the trade, especially, right? I mean, very top six heavy, and let's be fair to them, okay? I mean, the team 2 years ago thought it was going to be built for years with Landeskog and Nichushkin and Rantanen and McKinnon and Makar. Well, Landeskog hasn't played since the Stanley Cup final in 2022, and Nichushkin's been in and out for various reasons, so it hit them hard. Like, that's hard to deal with. And the fact that they've been able to stay not just above water, but as a Stanley Cup contender, or at least, you know, a playoff contender for without that, it is impressive. And it's a sign of exactly what Makar and McKinnon and Rantanen have been able to do for that. They've figured out their goal. I think they've figured out their goaltending, but their bottom six depth needed work. And I understand Rantanen coming out and saying, I would have taken a discount to stay there and all that. Did you tell your agent that? Did you tell the Avalanche that? Okay. I don't know the answers to those questions, but I agree with you. I don't know that it would have mattered, because even if the cap soars to over $100 million, right, in the next 2 years, you're still looking at paying three guys. You know, what are you looking at here? I mean, Makar's going to get $16 million in 2 years, right? McKinnon's already at 12 and a half, almost 13, somewhere in that neighborhood. If Rantanen gets the same, I mean, you're paying a lot of money to three guys, and it makes it hard to fill out your depth as you go on with legitimate depth, with real good depth, not just the two AHL call-ups that come in and try to help you out. You don't win that way, right? You got to be able to win differently. And I mean, with Marty Natchez, he's $6.5 million through next season. Team's trying to win right now. That's essentially another six. If you were to get $13 million, right? Let's say $13 million for Rantanen. It's another $6.5 million that they've got to play with, and you, that's two good players, Sean.
And you haven't even factored in the LTIR with Landeskog.
Well, you hope that he comes back at some point, and
but that's what I'm saying. When he comes back, that money's no longer there to play with. That's hard money inside the cap.
Yep, you're right. You're right. So, and I also don't think that the Colorado is going to look at it and go, all right, we're good now. No, I mean, they're not going to do that. They have a little bit of extra flexibility, cap flexibility with this trade. They know they need to continue to fill out the bottom six depth. Lost in all of this, by the way, too, the addition of Jack Drury is a nice addition. Okay. I mean, that's a solid addition for a bottom six role for Jack Drury. And that's a start for them, but they need more in that area. They clearly have some high-end talent. You know, a guy like Arturi Lehkonen gets overlooked, but he's a terrific player and does so many different things for them. So I get it from Colorado's perspective, even though it was shocking. Carolina's perspective, I think they make, like, I love it. I love the risk. I love what they're taking on here. They're basically saying, look at us. We're in the East. The East is wide open. We're going to go get it. And they don't know if they're going to re-sign Rantanen. They have no idea. I think the conversation has to be had between Eric Tulsky, their general manager, and Tom Dundon, the owner, before they make this trade. Like, hey, what are our chances of re-signing him? So you got to think that they have a chance to re-sign him. But they're saying, they're going out there and saying, we're putting the risk on us right now that this is going to work out in our favor, and re-sign him or not. Like, that's what they're looking at. And I love it.
Yeah, and that's the place. That's the place for the Finns. Go to Carolina.
That's true. Go to Carolina. That's true. No,
there's a bunch of Finns there, and there's an honorary Finn there, and Seth Jarvis, and you're good to go. It's a great place to live. The quality of life is fantastic. The cost is fantastic. The organization is top notch. They're competitive every year. Everybody you talk to says Rod's a dream to play for, just like Jared Bednar was. There's really not a downside. They're competitive every single year.
Right.
And your money goes further.
Do you think he resigns there?
I think there's a pretty good chance he does. I think some of it depends on what they do, right? If they go out in the first round of the playoffs, I think it's a little harder to sign him. I think he's a player that wants to be competitive and wants to play in big games and wants to compete for the cup. And I think that's his driving force. So if they're not successful in the playoffs, I think it becomes a little harder. But I don't think there's anything in Carolina that would dissuade him from wanting to sign there. Every part of that organization, I think, is top notch.
That I agree with 100%. It's not going to be the Hurricanes are not going to be the reason he doesn't sign there. But I also look at it and say, if Mikko Rantanen was willing to take a hometown discount to stay in Colorado, that's not going to happen. Well, then why wouldn't he go to July 1st and see what else is out there for him? You could always go back to the Hurricanes, right? They're going to be in the mix for him, I would imagine, unless they blow him away with an offer before that. If I'm Mikko Rantanen, this is your shot, right? This is your big payday. You might as well explore the market and see everything you got. That I think you owe it to yourself as a player. Now that the team that you've been on for 10 years has moved on from you, right? That loyalty is gone. Now you're loyal. You don't need to have loyalty to the Hurricanes.
No, although that is the team that moved heaven and earth to get you and clearly values you. But no, I think there's very little loyalty. As we talk about it, I think the thing that amazes me more than anything is the complexity of this deal. And nobody heard a word about it. It's like a Lou Lamoriello deal.
Really good, right? Like, I hate it because we want to hear more about these things in our line of work. But
yeah, three teams.
Yeah.
And not a leak.
Not a leak at all. And then there's the Blackhawks. Then there's the Blackhawks end of this. They trade Taylor. By the way, Taylor Hall is a nice addition for the Hurricanes too. He is he's going to be he already is, I think, a little bit rejuvenated, playing there as well. And now he's also a half season in to coming off of a major injury, so you're getting the better end of Taylor Hall now. Like, all that rust that he had is gone, and he's back in a playoff chase, back on a contender. This is big for Taylor Hall as well, and he can play a pretty big role, I think, for the Hurricanes. And remember, Taylor Hall's playing for another contract too. So like that's a big deal. But then there's the Blackhawks end of this, and they get their own third round pick back for this. I understand that fans are going to, Blackhawks fans are going to be like, what are we doing? Like, we're holding money, we're retaining money for Mikko Rantanen, and all we do is, and we trade Taylor Hall, and all we get is our own third round pick back. It's part of the deal when you broker in a trade and you're not in exactly a great position. I think they might have been able to get a little bit more considering everything that they had to do to broker this deal and the player they're giving up to. But if you ask me, if it comes to March 7th trade deadline, they're probably getting a third round pick if he's healthy, right? Maybe a second, depending on how he's playing, but it's not going to, they're not getting a haul, pardon it, for Hall.
Nice. Yeah, no, I think, and everybody talks about the money. The money's meaningless. It's not
irrelevant.
Your money.
It's irrelevant.
It's not your money. It's half a season. It's gone. It's not like you're holding the bag for years on it. Like, it almost, like, it's hard to say that millions of dollars don't matter. But they don't. It's a bookkeeping move.
Yep.
Right? Like,
that money was going out regardless. Right,
it's not impacting what the Blackhawks can do. They're not going to make so many moves this year that all of a sudden they're going to have a salary cap problem and they're going to be like, wow, I wish we weren't holding this Rantanen money. Right. And if they want to be aggressive next year, that money's gone. So, whatever they got, it doesn't bother me. And at least, the only thing for me is Taylor Hall was a really good example.
Yes.
For Connor Bedard. You want to learn how to be a pro. You want to learn what it's like to be a number one pick and to go through the NHL and what that career arc is like and how you handle it and what you do with the setbacks and what you do with the disappointments and everything else. There's your guy. And he's probably, behind Connor Bedard, he's probably the most skilled guy on the roster.
Wasn't playing like it, but you're right about that.
He's one of the few guys on that roster that can think like Connor Bedard and can say to him, hey man, this is right. I know it didn't work out, but you're in the right ballpark. Like, you're thinking the right way, you're doing the right things. It's not working out sometimes because others aren't thinking that way or can't think that way. I think he was really good on Connor. And Connor said the same thing after the trade was done the next day. You know, he told out Tracy Myers. He's like, hey, he was really important to me. And sometimes I don't know that you can put a price on that.
Third round pick. That's the price. they put a price on it, right?
Yeah. I mean, of course they, but how do you measure what his value was? I guess we're going to see over the next 35 games.
Well, yeah, we'll see. I like the trade from, I really like the trade from Carolina. I understand the trade from Colorado. We'll see how it works out. The Blackhawks were just the broker. They got a third round pick. It's an awesome trade. It's a blockbuster. Love it. Again, we got Brady Tkachuk coming up here in a few minutes. But, Sean, before we get to that, there could be another blockbuster coming in the NHL here with the Vancouver Canucks. God bless Jim Rutherford, right, Sean? God bless Jim Rutherford. We love honesty in this business. We love when people are open and aren't hiding things and aren't, you know, talking in cliches. And Jim Rutherford spoke to the Globe and Mail and did none of those things. Right out and honest with it, with the rift between JT Miller and Elias Pettersson. You and I talked about this. How can this not be resolved? Well, he kind of laid it out. Like, you know, it gets resolved for a little bit and then it breaks again. It's just, you know, it's irreconcilable differences. And it looks like one of them, I mean, more than likely JT Miller, but one of them is going to get moved. And they're both going to the Four Nations Faceoff. You want to think that that trade's going to happen before the Four Nations Faceoff. What if one of them or both of them go to the Four Nations Faceoff, Sean, and sustain an injury there? And that kind of throws the whole thing, right? I think that the February, whatever you call it, February 9th, if it is, right? February 9th is a soft deadline to get this done.
Yeah, I don't know that you can run your business that way. What if he gets hurt? What if this happens? Like, if you think you're going to get more for the player closer to the deadline, then I think you can let that soft deadline pass. And look, honesty's great and controversy's great. I mean, it's the bread and butter of our business, but it's not the way to run your business.
Don't care.
Wow. If you're a fan of the Vancouver Canucks, if you're management, if you're another player on that team, I think you care a little bit.
But do you think that by coming out and speaking the way he did, that he hurt their leverage? Or was their leverage already hurt? Was it well known enough?
I think the leverage was already hurt, and I think that's why you haven't seen a trade. But now it's worse. Like, if you're the other GM and you're like, well, I should make a trade while they're bickering in case they figure it out and get back together. Here's the price I'm going to pay. And now, you know, that's not the case. It's like playing Hold'em and the other player showing you his fourth card. Right. I'll show you the flop and then I'll show you one of my hole cards.
Right. I got you.
You don't have to show me yours. Now let's play.
Yeah. Listen,
who would
you're
do
right,
that.
But no, you're 100% right, but it still goes back to, you know, we all know now, right? And that maybe it's not the best for the Vancouver Canucks. I don't know that it makes that big of a difference. I think it's pretty well known what's going on there. I think we need to give I think overall more credit needs to be given to the general managers in this league for what they know and what versus what we know, right? They know a lot. Okay. They know a lot of what's going on. They have a lot of sources and spies, if you will, whatever it might be, but something is going to happen there. The most interesting thing that came of that. And listen, I highly doubt it because he shot it down, was like the nuclear option of, hey, if we're going to go into a rebuild, we're trading Miller, we're trading Pettersson, and we're probably trading Quinn Hughes too if we're going to go into a rebuild. Though we don't want to do that. We want Quinn Hughes to be here for the remainder of his career. So that's not something we're looking at. But that would be a nuclear option. Jim Rutherford said that, which I thought was really interesting, though I don't see it going anywhere.
Yeah, and again, why? Like, I understand maybe you're trying to drop a hand grenade in that room and say, hey, boys, wake up. This is what could happen if you don't get your stuff together. But how do, like, chaos is fun. chaos is great. You can't live in chaos, right? The days of Mike Keenan wanting the whole team to hate him because they'll play better, they don't work anymore.
No.
Like, that's not how things work. Chaos, the players today are so rigid and so organized and so insular. The chaos is not a part of their DNA. Like, they just doesn't, they want to know why all the time. Like, that's how they work now. It's why coaches like the ones we just talked about, Brind'Amour and Bednar and those kind of coaches, are so successful, is because they're transparent. And they tell the players, this is why. This is why you're playing 7 minutes a game. This is why he's playing 25 minutes a game. This is why we do this. This is our rotation. This is our DNA. And we're not going to deviate from it. Where is that in Vancouver? It's complete chaos.
It's, you know, complete what? Chaos.
If we don't get our way and we got to move these two guys, then I'm going to move the franchise defenseman.
There's no way they're doing that. I don't know why he said that. That to me was like, why is that? That was the one like that I was just like, whoa, really? You know, that doesn't make any sense. And maybe you're right. Maybe it's just dropping a grenade in the room and saying, here's boys, let's go. But the boys let's go thing is past. It's gone once you say the other stuff, right? The boys let's go thing is, hey, let's figure this out. No, you already told them that you can't. You already told everybody that they can't figure it out. So we got to get this done sooner than later. And they're not going to win the trade. Whoever they trade, they're not going to win the trade.
Well, they can't win the trade because if you're a GM, why am I trading for either one of those guys?
Oh, well, hold on. Different. I understand that.
No, but it's not different.
These are two guys who seem to, between the two of them, can't get along. Yeah. JT Miller's been in the National Hockey League a long time. He's had
success. How many teams has he played for?
Well, he played for the Rangers. They played for the Lightning and the Canucks, right? So three teams. That's not that crazy. That's not that crazy.
Okay.
It's not that crazy. And remember, he was part of a trade with the Rangers to the Lightning that when the Rangers started to rebuild, it was a different situation, and he was a key part of a move. The trade didn't work out, but he was a key part of a beginning of a rebuild. And I think it was with Tampa. It was just like they knew they weren't going to be able to afford him. I think he was pretty well liked in Tampa. So, and Elias Pettersson, I don't know. I mean, he's on his only team. I wouldn't trade Pettersson. He's 26 years old. He's too good. Like I wouldn't move him.
Is he too good?
I think he is. I think he's really good. And I think he's this guy. He's an 80 to 100 point player. Not this season, but he is. He should be. And
well, those are two different things, Dan.
He's not this season. There's no question, but you ask anybody who goes through a career, unless you're an absolute superstar, you do have times where you have a down year. It does happen. It does happen. And there's a lot going on. But if I have to choose between the two, I'm going to try to get the best deal possible I can get, obviously. I mean, I would lean towards trading the 31-year-old over the 26-year-old, you know? So there's that. We'll see. We'll see where it goes. I think it's very fascinating. I love Jim Rutherford. God bless him for his comments. I understand exactly what you're saying, though, of sometimes, you know, you know, for the benefit of your team and your organization, your business, might not have been the best thing. Don't care. Love it.
Yeah, I don't know. I just know that I wouldn't be chasing a guy that's not going to fit into my culture.
But how do you know he's not going to fit into your culture? You don't know that.
Because he already hasn't. Like part of being a professional in any walk of life is you work with people that you don't like, that you don't respect, that you have no use for. It's part and parcel of agreeing to go to work and not working for yourself. Once you enter into a contract to work with other people, there's a good chance you're not going to like one of those people. Maybe you're not going to like many of those people. But part of being a professional is saying, I don't like that guy. He's kind of a jerk. But I'm getting paid a lot of money. I better do my job.
Fair.
That's just those are the rules.
It's fair. I still think they're both valuable players in a trade, but I don't think the Canucks win the trade either way. Listen, that's not how this relationship works between you and I. I respect you.
Utmost respect, Dan.
Utmost respect. But we have the utmost respect for Brady Tkachuk for coming on with us. Coming on, he willingly talked to us, Sean.
Yes.
Came on our podcast to talk to us. So
we are not a two-cab podcast, Dan.
Listen, utmost respect for Brady Tkachuk for coming on and talk with us. We've teased it. I told you he was coming on. So you have to listen to it. Brady is just a terrific interview. We talked all things Four Nations face off with Brady Tkachuk. And the interview, of course, is brought to you by Skip. Skip to the good part. Get groceries, meals, and essentials delivered right to your door on Skip. Here's Brady Tkachuk. Brady, thanks so much for joining us. How you doing? You enjoying this season? Looking forward to the Four Nations?
Yeah, no, it's been good. We're right in the mix of things here. That's kind of first and foremost. And it's hard not to get excited for what's to come in a couple weeks.
So when you look ahead to the Four Nations, and listen, I understand everything going on with Ottawa, that takes precedence right now until you get to Montreal. I understand that. But when you look ahead, there's a lot of things to look forward to. In your mind, what clicks? What's the thing that you're most looking forward to?
There's a couple things. Two off the top of my head, it's one, being able to represent your country. That's kind of first and foremost. And really excited, really honored, and really looking forward to that opportunity. And second, being able to play with my brother along the way. It's our first time ever we're going to be playing in something like that together and kind of anything together. So I'm really excited to spend some time that usually we wouldn't get during the season and try to win together. I think that's something that we've always dreamt of doing and doing that side by side.
So you don't count the 2023 All-Star game when you guys were teammates?
Yeah. Well, that was in a fun format, but to be able to win something for your country, I think that's going to be something even more special.
So, you guys have battled, right? I mean, you're brothers, like any brothers would, right? I mean, you go head-to-head against each other, you chirp each other and all that. You haven't had the opportunity to be teammates. Can you play on the same line? I mean, if you play on the same line, what's that going to be like?
Be a lot of fun. I feel bad for our centerman at times, but I think we would have, of course, a lot of chemistry and we both like to go to that inside and near the net. So it'd be a lot of chances and it'd be pretty cool to be able to connect on a goal.
You know, I mean, just the attention that you and your brother get, I think it's great. The family gets, it's known as a very, well-known hockey family, a well-respected hockey family. What do you think, in those quiet moments, maybe when you're just a family, just home? What do you guys think about the attention that the two of you get and the family gets in the hockey world?
Well, I think first it's a privilege. I think, especially for us to kind of go back to when we were kids and around rinks we, of course, our dad was our role model just to see how he treated everybody how everybody, kids, other parents looked up to, my dad and the way he carried himself and how genuine, nice guy. And I think that's something that it's kind of radiated towards Matthew and I, where I think we're like starting to realize kind of the impact we have on, the next generation of kids and especially Matthew, who, of course in the Amazon and being able to be showcased in that way for him and kind of our family and people kind of being along the ride for the Stanley Cup ride and what he's done and his individual career and what he's done for, Southern Florida and that fan base and those memories that, he created down there, I think has been really impactful. And people, not just think about, the Stanley Cup down there, but they think about the players that did it and that they just want to be like those players like Matthew when they grow up.
So, Brady, I wanted to ask you, when you look at the Four Nations, the two places it's going to be are in Montreal and in Boston. I don't think either one you would call either one of those places hospitable to you. Does it make it a little more fun? I mean, look, in Boston, you're going to be a hero for once because you're playing for the Americans. But does it make it a little more fun for you to continue to be able to play that villain role a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, especially Montreal and playing Canada in Montreal. I think that's going to be a unique experience. You know, talking with Shabney, he said that was the loudest he's ever heard a building was in Montreal, World Juniors, that gold medal game. So to be able to have that experience for kind of the best on best is something that I feel like is going to be, you know, be able to remember for forever. And we're actually talking about in Boston to finally be a good guy in Boston. And I think that might be even more weird for Matthew, especially with how the last couple of years have gone. So, we've kind of laughed about it, excited about it. Especially in Boston, we have family here. Of course, I played at BU. So be able to play in the Garden where, you had the support of BU fans, and then you kind of had the villain from other schools, in that Beanpot game when we played Northeastern. That was a pretty amazing experience. So just to be able for it to be best on best, I expect some amazing crowds.
You have a deep history in Boston. You have family in Boston, and you have ties throughout this team. I would assume it's almost, for you, it's almost like a homecoming all across the board, right? With players that you've played with, Billy Guerin, who you know, obviously your dad knows well, the locations, everything. There's almost nothing that's uncomfortable about it.
I mean, it's going to be so nice to be able to, you know, play with guys that, of course, on any given day, you're battling against them every single night, and to kind of share the same goal and share potential, winning together. I think that's something that's always bonds guys together. And especially when you grew up playing against them since 16, 17, 18 years old, it's those are special memories that we already have so far, but to be able to add to them, it's going to be even more fun.
So the last time the U.S. won a best on best tournament, your dad was in it, the 1996 World Cup. How much have you heard about that, especially in the lead up to this?
No, just I've heard about it a lot, growing up, especially, at the U.S. program, World Juniors, and it's always kind of been the message that 96 World Cup team was so impactful for USA Hockey, and I think it's shown in some of these markets that some of the players are coming from that I feel like before that you weren't getting many, players and kids from those types of markets, but now you see the growth of the game within the U.S. and now you got guys coming from Arizona, Florida, California. I feel like that was kind of the start of the growth of the game, and it just continues to get better and better.
Have you ever watched any of those games, like full thing, and pretty much tell your dad that there's no way he'd survive today?
Yeah, I mean, there's usually like a marathon that happens around 4th of July about games that I remember in the summer we'd be watching, and Matthew and I were just jaw dropped about just how the game was back then, how just insane it was, and how just it was anything goes. It's just it was almost kill or be killed back then, and it's funny looking back just how tough and everybody, like the best players in the world, they didn't matter if they were teammates on their respective teams. It was all about winning. It was all about, it didn't matter who they were up against. They're kind of going to dictate their will on them.
It sounds like you're a little jealous. And I just wanted to follow up about something you said a little bit earlier. You've been going against guys that are going to play in this tournament since you were 15, 16 years old. Is there a rivalry that you have with somebody that's going to be in this tournament, like a personal rivalry where you really enjoy going back and forth with them?
Well, I wouldn't say there's a specific guy, but it is going to be a little fun and unique when, even guys on the U.S. that, battle with throughout the year that just be able to share, the team and share a common goal. That's going to be a lot of fun to be able to do.
I guess along those lines, other than Matthew, is there anybody on this U.S. roster that you haven't played with before that you're like, yeah, that's, I'm looking forward to playing with that guy? Or is there a center? Like, I hope that guy gets, I want to play with that guy. And it could be everybody, but is there a specific one or two that you're looking at?
Cool. I don't know. I mean, there's so many great players. It's such a unbelievable opportunity, and I mean, there's just so many guys that I've played with in the past that able to just play together with again. Like, Quinn was my roommate at the US program, and they'll be all. It'll just be nice to spend,2 weeks together on the same team in the locker room, just having fun, spending time, yeah, I really don't think I could just say one person. I think it's the whole group that I'm just so excited to just spend time with.
You mentioned the U.S. program, the development team program. Can you speak on the impact that that program has had on you as a player, but just as a person too?
I mean, I think that's just where a lot of my, core values as an individual has come from. There's just so many amazing people that work there and commit their lives to just every year, every generation to gel them to be the best man that they could be, best teammate, best leader, best player, and just overall as a person, just to maximize, yourself. I mean, it's just such an amazing thing what they do, not just, developing us as hockey players, but I think most importantly, developing us as human beings and core beliefs of what really matters. And that's, the family atmosphere that they have, team and just caring about one another.
You probably knew a lot. Well, you did know a lot about hockey when you got there to the program. But what'd you learn there? Like that, you talked a lot about core values, but I mean, just in the hockey sense, it seems like it's such an elite thing that even the best hockey players are humbled by it.
Well, it's the biggest thing I learned is that hard work, like that's the thing that you can control in life, and that's working your absolute hardest every single day. And there it's before I went there, I was practicing twice, maybe three times a week, and of course playing tournaments, youth hockey. But you get there and you kind of get that taste of what an NHL life could be, practicing every day, playing against older guys. Usually, here you play a game and maybe have a lighter day the next day, recover. But it's just all about getting better every single day and really kind of wrapping your head about now you want to be the hardest worker. You don't want to just work hard and you really want to maximize absolutely everything that they provide and that they're there for to be the best player that you can be.
Brady, you mentioned it earlier about the 96 team, right? The 96 and the impact they had on the next generation of hockey players in the United States. Can this USA team have that impact? Has it already had the impact already, but now that it's going to be together at this Four Nations, and I would assume a lot of you guys would also be at the Olympics next year, can it have that impact on the next generation? Like, is that something you think about?
You know what? It's not until now I haven't really thought about it, but I mean, yeah, I think it definitely can have that impact, especially that a best on best tournament hasn't happened in a while, and there'll be a lot of people watching and a lot of kids at home watching. Some of the best players in the world, not just going at it, but kind of doing whatever it takes to win. And I think it definitely can grow the game even more, and more importantly, grow the game in USA and create that next wave of players that. Not just from those generic cities, but just to really create that love for the game that all of us players have.
Before we let you go, I just got to ask one current events question. How much are you enjoying Ottawa right now and the run that they've been on?
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. It's been amazing. It's of course, first time I've ever been in a push like this, and kind of where anything can happen, and it's been a fun ride. I'm really looking forward to the next 30 plus games of seeing what happens, and I'm really excited for what's to come. There's a lot of belief in here that we'll be able to accomplish what we want to accomplish and have fun doing it.
I did have one more for you, international type question, but I wonder if you could tell us why it matters like so much, right? I mean, I think there was a fair question that some people had, like with this in-season tournament in February. It's not the Olympics, but the players really like be bought in. And from day one, the players are just, you guys are just like, absolutely, let's go. I can't wait, right? What is it about playing international hockey, especially best on best, and this will be your first chance to do it, that drives that hunger? What is it? Can you put words to it?
Want to be the best country. I mean, you want to show that confidence, and an event like this, it's you want to be the best. Like you want to come out winning this tournament. You want to share those memories. It's, you always want to be a winner, especially when it's best on best. It's you want to come out and prove that the U.S. is the best country.
Awesome. Well, good luck. It's going to be an amazing tournament. We can't wait to get there and see it all unfold. And we really appreciate the time.
Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
Great stuff there with Brady Tkachuk. Love that he came on with us. Looking forward to seeing him at the Four Nations Face-Off next month. It's coming up. It's going to be 2 weeks from now, by the way, Sean. We will be there. Less than 2 weeks, we'll be there. That interview, by the way, brought to you by Skip. Skip to the good part. Get groceries, meals, and essentials delivered right to your door on Skip. So, Sean, Four Nations Face-Off. Like I said, 2 weeks. Starts in 2 weeks, I think, right? Am I right from today?
If you say so, all I know is I'm there Super Bowl Sunday. So yeah. 10 days from now.
11. 10 days from now. And I arrive the morning after, early in the morning after Super Bowl Sunday. And yes, February 12th is exactly 2 weeks from today. And that's game one. That's the opener of the tournament. So there's a lot to break down with that too. We had a long discussion there with Brady Tkachuk about his excitement for the Four Nations Face-Off. But, you know, obviously we knew it was going to happen, Sean, that there was going to be some injuries and guys were going to be pulling out for injuries. The Alex Pietrangelo one is the one that, you know, catches the most attention because he pulls out saying to tend to an ailment. So Canada loses one of its top right shot defensemen. And then, I don't know, man, I kind of roll my eyes a little bit that he goes and plays 23 minutes against the Dallas Stars on Tuesday night. Can't play in the tournament, but I understand. Okay, got an ailment. Want to work on it. Your number one priority is to your team, So, and his number one priority is to the Vegas Golden Knights. So I get it. Who replaces him? That's a big debate now, right? Who replaces Alex Pietrangelo? Because it's Canada. That's why it's a big debate.
There's lots of candidates to replace him, right? And I think a part of it is kind of how you look at the whole process. For me, and we did this exercise, we did a roundtable on who the replacements would be, and I think mine was probably the most left field out of all of them. I picked Bowen Byram from the Buffalo Sabres, and the reason is they still have six really good defensemen. Like, it's Canada. Whoever's replacing now is the number seven. Right, and most likely he's not going to play unless there's an injury or something like that. And Byram's 23. Bring him in. Get him indoctrinated. Get him around a lot of these guys that are going to be on the Olympic team and the World Cup team coming up, and work him into that program. I think you're looking at a kid in a couple of years who's going to be a part of that mix. So. You have the luxury of having a seventh defenseman. Get that process started. And if he has to play, he's built for the Four Nations. He's big. He can move. He's got a little bit of offense to him. It's not like if you're, you know, you're John Cooper and you're like, oh, no, I got to put this guy in. Like, that's not happening. But, I mean, there's so many options.
Yeah. My guy was Mackenzie Weegar from the Calgary Flames. And the reason being is that he's not Pietrangelo, but he has a lot of Pietrangelo's intangibles. He's big, rangy, plays a lot of minutes, power play, PK, can play shutdown, generates offense. He's physical. He plays a lot like Pietrangelo. He doesn't have the international resume that Pietrangelo has. So you're losing that, but you're losing that regardless because he's not going to be there. So Mackenzie Weegar was my choice. I've heard a lot of discussion about this. A lot of people are looking at Mackenzie Weegar. Apparently he was one of the last cuts, if you will. So it wouldn't shock me if he was the guy that gets replaced. I think
Dan?
What
he's
else?
He's a really good team guy.
He is?
Like,
yes.
He's a guy who would walk into that team and understand a role. And understand what his role is. And when you're talking about elite defensemen, because this is an elite player tournament, sometimes it's really hard to take an elite player that plays 25 minutes a game and say, you're our number six.
Or seven.
You're gonna get, you're going to get 14 minutes a game, and that's it. And you're going to be playing against third and fourth lines, and you're not going to see any special teams. A lot of guys will do it and not be happy about it. That's not Uyghur. And most importantly, at the rink alum.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Great interview. Great interview. That's mainly why I favor him.
All tiebreakers go to the at the rink alum.
All tiebreakers go to the guys that come on this podcast. But I think he if you're looking to you picked Pietrangelo for a reason. And if you're looking to replace Pietrangelo, I would imagine you want to have a guy who does certain things the way Pietrangelo does. And that's Mackenzie Uyghur to me. I don't think Brandon Montour is a bad choice. I'm not saying that Byram's a bad choice or Chychrun or Ekblad or, you know, any of those guys. But I think Uyghur was my choice. Where I stumble, where I don't get it, is the talk of Drew Doughty. And Drew Doughty's coming back. He'll be back in the Kings lineup in a little, you know, next couple of days maybe, right?
Could be today.
Could be today. We don't know yet, right? Could be. We're talking this on Wednesday, January 29th. He could be back. By the time you listen to this, he could be already have played a game. So I get it. Drew Doughty is a Canadian legend, defensive legend, right? He's a two-time Olympic gold medalist, two-time Stanley Cup winner. I mean, always shows up when he can for Team Canada. He's arguably one of the best defensemen of the last 25 years in the National Hockey League. It all makes sense. I get it. But he hasn't played all season. And this is not a ramp-up tournament, right? I mean, this is not – sure, the Kings would probably love it if Drew Doughty went there, right? Because he's not getting another 2 weeks off. He's going to play games, meaningful games. That's going to help Drew Doughty for the Kings when this tournament's over and they get back to playing. But if you're Canada – you have all these other choices. Why take the risk on a guy who hasn't played yet this season and put him in on your team when you have guys who are going and have earned it this season because they've played well, a Uyghur, a Byram, a Montour, whatever it might be, right? I don't understand the conversation. Of course you're Drew Doughty, of course you want to go, right? You're back playing. He said it. I want to go play. I want to be playing games. That's great. I'd wonder if he didn't say that, right? I'd wonder about him if he didn't. But that's not the guy I'm looking at. As good as we know he is and everything he's done, it's not the guy I'm looking at right now. I'm not looking at to pick a guy to plug into my team to replace a 25-minute-a-night defenseman who's trying to ramp up his game. Not the guy I want.
You know what it says to me, though? Like with Doughty trying to come back and with other players openly advocating to be on the team and a player like Markstrom being gutted that he can't play, is this really mean something?
Yes.
Like there's been all kinds of conversation about this tournament and how it's not a true best on best and other countries aren't invited and it's not a World Cup and it's not an Olympics. Hey, you just listen to Brady. You listen to Drew Doughty. You listen to other players. That's clearly not the case.
Yeah. Anton Lindell, when we had him on last week, right?
Yeah.
Same. Yeah. It's not the case. It matters. I did a story on Brock Nelson. You can see it on NHL.com, his lineage with USA Hockey. Anytime these guys can play for their national team, it matters to them. There are times when they turn down going to the World Championships because they're spent. They're done. It's been a long season. And they just can't bring – they've lost. They've lost in the playoffs, and they just can't bring themselves to go overseas to play in a World Championships and whatnot. But for the most part, whenever they get a chance, they'll do it. And when you're doing it among your peers and it's an NHL event and you're wearing your national team jersey, this means so much to these guys. Not to go on a soapbox here, Sean, but it bothers me when I read stuff like, you know, I don't know why the NHL is doing a midseason tournament like this. Players are going to bail on it. No, they're not. Like Pietrangelo did. If he's bothered by an ailment, he's got to do what he's got to do. I understand, okay? But for the most part, 92 players were selected for this on December 4th, I want to say the day was. When, you know, 92 players, well, not, you know, they already had six per team, but 92 players were officially all named to the roster on December 4th. Most of them are going to be there when this tournament begins because they really, really want to be there.
Before we go, Dan, I'm sure the listeners are aware for the last month we've been doing the quarter century first and second teams for each team in the NHL. It's been a really interesting exercise. We were both part of it for certain teams, picking those teams. It, much harder than I thought when we came up with this concept. I'm like, oh, that's going to be most teams. That's going to be really easy to pick their first team. And then you go to do it because it's just during the quarter century, right? So a player like Jaromir Jagr, a lot of his stuff was done before 2000. It doesn't count. But now that's done, or it will soon be done. And in February, we move on to stage two, which is when the fans get to speak and they get to vote on the NHL first team of the quarter century. Again, well, that's really easy. It's this guy and that guy. But there are some tough decisions.
Yeah.
Listen, and fans... here's one that you might not think is tough. Goaltender. Who's your goaltender?
Well, first off, I think the fans are voting for the top 25, right?
Yes.
Yes, the fans are voting for the top 25. But you have to pick. It's regardless of position. Teams. Yeah. You have to pick from these first teams.
Second teams.
Who's my number one?
Who would be your number one goalie?
It's not even close. Smarty Berdur. I think he won the Vezina Trophy four or five times. He won the Cup twice.
Yeah.
It's Marty Brodeur. There's other good candidates. Marc-Andre Fleury is a great candidate. Right? Great candidate. Vasilevsky is a great candidate. Roberto Luongo is a good candidate. Marty Brodeur, I don't have the number in front of me, but I'm pretty sure he won the Vezina at least four times in the first decade. Right? Jennings, too. Multiple Stanley Cups. And I know this doesn't factor in because it's an NHL thing, but he won the gold medal in 2002. He won the gold medal again in 2010, although he was a backup then. Olympic gold. I know he retired, but also went to the Stanley Cup final in 2012, but like, it's Marty Brodeur. It's not even close to me.
Well, I don't know that it's not close, and I'm the biggest Marty fan of anybody. I've watched him my whole professional life. I basically saw every game he played. I think you could clearly make an argument for Marc-Andre Fleury.
You could.
He's won multiple cups.
He was a backup on two of them.
He
played in a lot in one. But then he was a backup in the cup final.
He was injured. And he never got his job back.
Matt Murray also won it, though. I mean, injured, whatever. Matt Murray won it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's Marty. I mean, you can make a compelling argument for Marc-Andre Fleury to be on the second team.
Well, I think you can make a compelling argument for him to be on the first team. I think the amount of the quarter century that he's played, the impact that he's had, all of those things. I don't think it's as clear cut as you think. And I think to me, that's the attractiveness of this project. Again, when we first sat down and brainstormed it, I'm like, this isn't going to be very compelling because I know all the answers. And then you sat down and you tried to do it, right? And we all voted on certain teams. And some of them were easy, some of them were hard. Nashville's running this week, and I was one of the guys that voted on that Nashville team. And my team is so different from the team that the panel ended up electing. It was nowhere near as easy as I thought it was going to be. And now, to name the top players of the quarter century, you know, you could get through five or eight, and then it gets really hard.
Yeah. No, it's been really good hockey, you know? I mean, that's why it is, and that is what it is. The fans are going to vote from February 12th through the 26th for the top 25 players of the past 25 years. All players eligible have to be on a first team, on their own respective team's quarter century first team. There are a couple of multiples, by the way. Like Scott Niedermayer is on the Ducks and the Devils first team. So there's a couple of multiples there. 100% of the vote for the fans. It's not easy. One of the exercises we did was to try to name our all NHL first team, and where I stumbled the most, Sean, was the third forward, because it's not so easy. But seems like we're probably out of time. So maybe we should talk about more of this next week. We could do that.
We can, and the voting will have started by then. For me, the fun part of it was you forget about so many players, right? Like, I've been lucky enough to cover the whole quarter century. Every year of it, you know, and like, you're doing this, and all of a sudden players start popping into your head, like really good players. Like, when I was doing San Jose, Jonathan Chichu was a really good player for them.
56 goal season.
Not a lot of people remember Jonathan Chichu because the NHL is so short term, right? Like, it's 5 years ago is a long time ago now. And it didn't used to be, because players stayed with their team forever. But now with the turnover and everything, like, when you try and remember back 5 years, you're going to have a hard time doing it, because that's the way life is now. But so for me, it was a lot of fun to go back and think about all the players that contributed in the past quarter century to all of these teams, right? When San Jose was good, when Nashville was good, and who had an impact on that. So if you haven't checked them out, I strongly suggest you do, because it's quite the history lesson. And then get out and vote. If you're not going to like the team when it's done, it's your fault if you don't vote. Vote early and vote often. It's not a presidential election.
Brent Burns is on the Sharks first team, and Brent Burns didn't know that. He was congratulated last night after playing at Madison Square Garden for being on the first team, and his response was, "Oh, that's so cool. Who had a vote? My mom?" So his mom did not have a vote, at least I don't think.
Nope, his mom was not on the list.
All right.
You know who his defense partner is?
Pickles, right?
Seth Jarvis.
Ah, yes, the great right shot defenseman for Canada. That's Seth Jarvis. Seth Jarvis again, had a great line.
Speaking of what this tournament means.
Yep. He said, "I'll play right shot D if they asked me to."
There might have been a couple of vulgarities there.
Yeah, there were a few. Great stuff. Great stuff on the pod. Great stuff by Brady Tkachuk. And again, this episode brought to you by Skip. Skip to the good part. Get groceries, meals, and essentials delivered right to your door on Skip. Enjoy the hockey.